Blog Talk Radio.
Much less detail the podcast, finally on the air on a Wednesday night, October 1st, 2014. I'm Dre, he's Jay. We have your NFL Week 4 recap coming up momentarily. But first, Jason, got to ask you, you say you got the coffee IV drip going for this one. Are you really going to be as tired as I am? Because I'm extremely tired right now.
Well, I realized I may have peaked too soon. I had a nice big cup of coffee about 9 o'clock, about an hour and a half ago, Central Time here, and it's already worn off. So my goal has gone from informative, fun football talk to not drooling all over myself.
Well, good luck to you on that. I'll be right behind you, drooling all the way. I don't want to make excuses and make it sound like, you know, woe is us, but yeah, it's been a tough couple of weeks, certainly for you with the new baby and then all your illnesses and your situation up there, and for me with all the things that I've had to go through and physically help clean out my mother-in-law's house this past weekend. Very tough thing to do physically and emotionally. And now back up here. And today getting the truck finally fixed. So hopefully that can be the end of me complaining about that. And right off to bowling. And now here I am doing the show. So it's been crazy. It's been a very hectic last month or so, actually. So,
well, but you know what? We're still here.
We're still here.
We're still here, and we're still hanging on, and we're still doing the show. We're soldiering on.
Still have listeners.
Surprisingly, yes. Somebody still listens to this show. It probably hasn't been the most insightful show over the last few weeks. at least by our records.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're 500 on the season. I'm 10 games under. But I think there's a lot of people that are probably doing a lot worse than that out there. You know, 500 against the spread through 4 weeks is nothing to sneeze at. It's not easy. It feels like it used to be easier back in the day, but I still have the theory that there's more parity in the NFL nowadays. It's so much harder to tell the teams that are in the middle what they're going to do from week to week. You always had the good teams and the bad teams, and you always had teams in the middle. But at least back in the 90s and the 2000s, to me, the teams in the middle, you knew which way they leaned, whether they were in the middle kind of good, in the middle kind of bad. All these teams, and there's more teams in the middle to me than ever before, and it's nearly impossible to tell which way they're leaning from week to week, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's showing in the results. There's stunning upsets, or seemingly stunning upsets every week, which is funny because after, you know, a couple of weeks of the schedule plays out, you know, we're only through week four, you start to see these teams, you know, maybe you had a different opinion of earlier on, you know, that everybody had a different opinion of. And then after they've played a few games, looked good, looked bad, then you can look back and go, you know what, maybe these guys aren't so bad. Or, as this seems to be the case this year, maybe these guys aren't so good. So, yeah, it's still early. You know, we'll look back, you know, what happens in the first 4 weeks You know, we'll be 8-10 weeks from now. We'll hardly remember a thing that we won't be very much that happened in these first few weeks as sort of a measuring stick for our picks at all. So we've hardly even learned what's going to happen this year.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we learned that one team that's truly terrible is the Oakland Raiders. They went overseas to Great Britain and got wiped out by the Miami Dolphins. Dennis Allen, the coach of the Raiders in England, gets flushed down the toilet, down the loo, as they would say over there. Really, is that anything that's going to change the fortunes of the Oakland Raiders firing Dennis Allen? Did that mean anything to you at all?
No, isn't the average age of their defense still 62 years old? I mean, aren't most of those guys on AARP?
Pretty much.
I mean, that's not going to change. I mean, they can bring in Tony Soprano. Yes, I know his name is Tony Soprano, but it's more fun when his name is Tony Soprano. They could bring him in as a Band-Aid, but what's that really going to do? They're still terrible. Derek Carr is still banged up. I mean, is Matt McGloin going to lead you to the promised land, or is Matt Schaub going to, you know, come back and do anything? So, that's just a hot mess. So, yeah, they fired their coach. He's probably thanking them. I mean, if you want to be out of a head coaching situation anywhere in the NFL, it's Oakland. And he can take the rest of the year off. He'll probably get himself a cushy college job or a assistant job somewhere next year and be much happier than he was coaching that shitbag team.
I based my pick of taking Oakland over Miami on all the little mind games that seem to be played by the Miami coach during the week, refusing to tell Ryan Tannehill whether he was going to be the starter or not, insinuating that Tannehill had done enough to lose his job even after the week one upset of New England, and Ryan Tannehill comes out in England and just destroys the Raiders. Was that just because it's the Raiders, or was Tannehill maybe a little inspired by all of that?
It's the Raiders.
Oh.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously I didn't pay attention to this stat earlier in the week because we both made a horrible pick taking the Raiders, but there's been enough of these London games now, almost like with Thursday night games, where the favorites tend to do really, really well. So with these London games or Mexico City games or, you know, any of these games that are played on more neutral territory, it's been really heavy for the favorite. And it sure played out in that game. I know Oakland was up early, like quick, boom, 7-0, I believe. And then you never heard from them again.
Ugh. Yeah, you know, it's easy to just kind of psych yourself out when you try to, because otherwise you would just go picking, you know, the home favorite for every Thursday night game and for every London game. And while the odds would seem to indicate that you might be, you know, more successful doing that in the long run, it's, you know, still we have our egos. We can't just go taking a formula for every single situation or, you know, taking a particular situation and saying that we have a formula for every single game in that situation and we're not going to deviate from that. We still think we can see when that formula is going to crack and we can make the pick that cracks that formula. And we thought we were going to crack it with Oakland over Miami, but didn't quite work out.
No, and I'm glad we got that game out of the way early on. So we don't have to talk about the Raiders anymore on this show, do we?
Absolutely not.
All of our Raider fan listeners are happy now.
So what would you like to talk about? What intrigued you over this past week four?
You know, I know it's been done up in the media so much. It's got to be the Chiefs blowing out New England the way they did. That was, you know, I didn't see the whole game. But I didn't need to see the whole game. I saw a nice stretch of that game early on in the first half, and the Chiefs could do anything they wanted. The Patriots couldn't do anything. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I absolutely stunned at how overmatched That's the most overmatched I've ever seen a Patriots team look in the last, well, geez, what's it been? I mean, 2001 was when they won that first Super Bowl with Brady. So we're talking 13, 14 years. I cannot remember seeing a team that looks that bad in New England. And they looked horrid. Just no identity on offense. I put it on the blog this week that, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to find a worse group of running backs and wide receivers as what they're putting on the field in New England. I mean, they've got Gronkowski, and that's it. They can't really run. I don't trust any of those running backs. And, you know, and Danny Amendola and Julian Edelman and Brandon LaFell aren't exactly striking fear in anyone's hearts. And Tom Brady's way too old. You know, degrading in his talent. They've got to have people around him. I mean, you know, Elway won those Super Bowls late only because he had Terrell Davis and Rod Smith, and, you know, he had A-class talent around him. Patriots are going to go very quietly into the night this year if they don't figure something out on that offense.
Well, you're showing where you lie on this question that I had about that for you, but my question was, aren't we all kind of over-exaggerating? Doesn't New England kind of look this bad at this stage of the season every year in the first quarter or the first half of the year? Doesn't it take that long for Tom Brady to get on the same page with his new receivers every year? It seems like we do this – it seems like we've done this every year for the last maybe 4 or 5 years. That, oh, my God, Tom Brady is losing it. Oh, it's over in New England. The dynasty is over. The Bill Belichick arrogance has gotten to him, and the roster is complete shit because Belichick thinks he could put together a roster full of nobodies and still win because he's Bill Belichick. And while there may be a little bit of truth to all that, I still feel like we do this every year. We marvel over who is Aaron Dobson and who is Kenbrell Tompkins, and they wind up actually contributing before the year is over. And I bet they'll both contribute again before this year's over, even though they were both inactive for this Monday night game. But I just feel like we go through this all the time. Tom Brady is the type of quarterback that really needs precision timing with his receivers in order to succeed. He can't just go out there and sling it around. He doesn't have the arm for that. He never really had the arm for that. But nowadays, more than ever, he really needs to get on the same page with his guys to have any kind of success. And I think you're just seeing, you know, a combination of some new guys. You mentioned LaFell, and Gronkowski is almost like a new guy to me because he's not the same Rob Gronkowski as he was before. He's not that guy right now. He's a big goal line back, you know, threat, almost like an H-back. There's, you know, a ton of guys in the league like that, that they can use their bodies to kind of post up in the end zone and make catches, but he wasn't doing – that wasn't all he was, you know, in the last couple of years, obviously. He was an all-over-the-field threat. He was, you know, he stretched the field vertically and horizontally. He's not doing that right now. He just isn't. Whatever the reason is, he's just not. And I think that Brady is having a little trouble adjusting to that. I think I think I've seen him a few times being pressured and sort of looking for, you know, this is where Gronkowski would be waiting for me right there, 15 yards away, and I could just hit him, and he's not there right now. But I think once all of that does gel, then New England will be right back where they need to be at the top of that division. The problem is it keeps getting further and further away every year, that date where they gel, you know, September, now we're in October, you know, maybe November until it happens. You know, there's a risk for waiting that long to get everything on the same page, that they might wind up, you know, with a team like Miami if they are actually ready, which we thought they might be this year, and now we don't know again. A team like that in the division, we know the Jets aren't the team. We know the Bills aren't that team. So there's a jeopardy in waiting that long to get it all together for the Patriots. But I don't think they have any choice. I think this is who they are. I think this is what happens every year. And I think we kind of a little bit, as a whole, overestimate the impact of it at the beginning of the year.
Well, on the other side of that could be, too, maybe we're underestimating the Chiefs a little bit. Maybe we wrote them off a little too soon, too.
Yeah, I hate to admit that, but boy, when that offense is clicking, it can be dynamic. And that's with Alex Smith as its quarterback. So that's, obviously you don't think dynamic when you think Alex Smith. But it's all about Andy Reid, and the offensive coordinator in Kansas City is the former Dolphins backup quarterback Doug Peterson. So I think he's seen a little bit of good quarterback play in his time, being the former backup for Dan Marino. And Brett Favre.
Doug Peterson was a backup in Green Bay for quite a few years, and he was a starter with the Eagles. I believe right before, I want to say before Donovan McNabb came to town. Does that sound about right?
Perhaps. To look up the great Doug Peterson bio.
I could do that.
But he's learning now from Andy Reid. You take all that other knowledge he's got now. He's with Andy Reid learning that offense. That's some serious football minds to be learning from. And when they put everything together in Kansas City and get that offense humming, there's a geometry to it that when you're watching it, you see all the different angles that are being taken, and it's not the normal angles that you're used to seeing. There's a certain method of having this guy go this way and this guy go the other way that Andy Reid is really, he's got a special mind, I tell you. He put some stuff together. I don't know if I've ever seen that particular run play where he had two different ghost guys running to the left, two different receivers acting as if they were about to receive a reverse from Alex Smith, and instead it's a handoff to the running back going right, and there's like nobody out there because you're chasing ghosts. You're looking at those other two receivers running those ghost patterns to the left. And it's bad enough when you have one guy running that way and you have to kind of wait and see, does he have it, does he not have it? When it's two different guys running a ghost, I don't remember seeing that before, and it was extremely effective against New England.
Yeah, and you've started to see, as you saw that a couple of years ago when the 49ers made the Super Bowl, and that, that was the shortened season with the lockout. You had all these teams who couldn't react to the read option. And then last year you saw a lot of teams, adjusted to it. You didn't see these quarterbacks taking off and doing as much. Some of these guys, like RG3, who was so successful with his first year, they started to get beat up. So it became about the defenses reacting. Now you're starting to see all the fakes, all the fake end-arounds. Although they're just putting all the little wrinkles now in the read option. I think you saw Seattle in that opening game, where Russell Wilson does the fake read option run and then just lobs the ball over the defense,
Right.
So you're starting to see, as the defenses have reacted to this read option, you're starting to see the offenses react now, and you're starting to see some really extravagant play calls. I mean, obviously, something that they've worked on, a lot, and or variations of one play all within one game. So, hey, you can do the fake end around, but, you could keep faking that and giving it the running. But, maybe next week you'll get a team, you'll think, oh, they're just going to keep, yep, and then eventually it will be an end around. So it's really interesting the way that works, and then you'll start to see the defenses coming back and reacting to that too. But New England had no answer for anything that the Chiefs were doing, especially that 1-2 running back attack. Boy, if they can keep Jamaal Charles healthy, it seems like the easiest way to keep him healthy is to just share the load between him and Nile Davis, because both of those guys looked impressive, I will say that.
That's no fun to have both of those guys coming at you. Charles, as shifty as he is, a tremendous athlete, and then take him out, and here's Nile Davis just going to pound your ass. Just 230 pounds and just hit you in the fucking mouth.
I want to say that there was a goal line. I believe Jamal Charles caught a touchdown pass in the game,
yeah.
if I'm not mistaken, where yeah. he was wide. You know, he was out as a receiver. Don't be surprised if Andy Reid starts putting both of those guys in the game a lot. You got to get your best playmakers on the field. Alex Smith isn't throwing the ball down the field at all. You know, he's doing all, he's basically dinking and dunking and being efficient. Well, the easiest thing to do to make your team look good is put playmakers on the field all at one time, get them the ball as fast as they can, and let them make their moves.
Charles had a 5-touchdown game last season against, I think it was Oakland. And if I recall, either 4 or 5 of those touchdowns were receiving or something like that. They love to do that in Kansas City. They love to send the running back out in patterns. And this particular pattern he ran, it made it 24-0. I wrote it down, and I made sure to take a note that it was a sick pass route that he wrote. He did a juke move on some linebacker inside and left him in the dirt. His draws were on the ground. It was just – it was wrong what he did to him. And, yeah, everything was clicking for Kansas City in that game. There was – New England had no chance, basically, from the beginning of the game. And most disheartening, maybe, even more than the lack of offense out of the Hall of Famer Tom Brady and the Patriots, was watching your defense, your rather talented defense, get so winded and so tired early. They were done in the first quarter because of all the misdirections and all the different things that the Chiefs were doing on offense. You could already tell in the first quarter that New England was gassed and that it was not going to go well the rest of the night. And that's against Kansas City's offense. So you can only imagine what happens if a real team gets on the field with the New England Patriots right now. It's going to go bad. But again, that's why I admire Andy Reid so much, because he can draw up special game plans like this. I think he does really try to do this every game. It doesn't work out because you can only do so much with, you know, Alex Smith and Dwayne Bowe as your best receiver and whatnot. But on those nights when it all comes together, it can be quite magical.
I know it pains you to have spent the last 10 minutes saying nice things about the Chiefs. So you sucked it up pretty good there.
All praise to Andy Reid and the Chiefs. When they're awesome, I call them on it. And they were awesome Monday night.
And yes, here's Doug Peterson, back up to Dan Marino for 3 years, and then played in the Europe League, World League. How's that? The World League.
Nice.
Yep, then he backed up Brett Favre in Green Bay. Then he went to the Eagles for 1 year. So I don't know why I remember Doug Peterson with the Eagles, but there he is. 1999, 1 year with the Eagles, then went to the Browns for a year, which I also remember, and then came back and mopped up for Brett Favre again for 3 more years in Green Bay.
Well, that's interesting. I have his bio up here from the Kansas City Chiefs coaches page at NFL.com, and if you're listening, NFL.com, somebody needs to do some work here. They have the year 1999 up here, but they do not have Philadelphia for that year. They mistook, they left out Philadelphia by mistake. They have Green Bay Packers 95 through 98 and then 01 through 04, and then it says 1999, as if he went back there in 99. But no, Philadelphia should be in 99, but Philadelphia is not here at all. It's just missing. So somebody needs to get on that. Pronto.
Yeah, and it was, Donovan McNabb was selected that year in the draft in 1999. So that would have been the year that Peterson was there as well.
That's so long ago, I can't remember if McNabb was thrown right in as a starter his rookie year or not. Because they didn't usually do that. They
right.
only started doing that in the last maybe 10 years or so. So I'm thinking Peterson might have been the starter while McNabb, you know, sat on the bench and sort of learned at the knee of Andy Reid there. But anyway, we've broken down Doug Peterson enough, I believe. I was looking at my notes for New England KC, trying to see if I missed anything. I did want to point out that Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, Boy Wonder, his offensive coordinator, who went out to Denver and absolutely made a mess of himself as a head coach, are known for having big balls and going for it in different situations, in short yardage situations on fourth down when a lot of teams would punt or try a field goal or something like that. They're the types, more often than not, of any other coaches in the league, they're the ones that are more likely to go for it in those scenarios. Now, there was a couple of times, two times at least, in the first half where New England got stopped driving across midfield and decided to punt.
Yes.
What happened? Where are their balls? What happened to Belichick and Boy Wonder's big balls? What happened? You know, you want to talk about showing a message to your team when you're the type that says, I got the offense to go for it, and I don't give a fuck what anyone tries to do. And now in these situations, you're meekly sending your punt unit on, and you're running fake offenses onto the field and faking that you're going for it on fourth down and making the other team call a timeout just so you can send the punt team back on. That sends a bad message to your team. Like, I don't have the balls right now to do this because I don't have confidence in you losers.
And it was funny because right after the one where the offense sprinted back on the field and the Chiefs were like, no, you know what, no thanks, we'll call a timeout. And then, you know, Belichick's like, oh, what do I do now? They called a timeout. Like, I was going to catch them off guard running 11 guys on and off the field all at one time. You know, so they burn a timeout, then they come back from the break, they punt, and then the Chiefs go on a 3-play, 86-yard drive. Boom, 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 right into the end zone. I mean, just, wow.
Yeah, that was the first drive of the second quarter.
Yeah, if you're punting because you trust your defense, yeesh. Wow, they had no answers. They had no answers.
The other primetime game this weekend featured a team that had no answers for the home team once again. And you got both these picks right, so you get to totally talk about and gloat about it. The New Orleans Saints go into Big D and get whooped by the Dallas Cowboys, and I did not see that coming.
I took the Cowboys. I didn't take the Cowboys by three touchdowns. I mean, if anything, you know, it's the cop-out line. You'd figure, it's a push. It's a push line. I didn't have, of course, I mean, you had all the stats, but I didn't have any stats to back me up. I just had that feeling, seeing what I'd seen so far from New Orleans and seeing what I'd seen so far from Dallas, that two teams going in different directions. You know, Dallas had the big rousing comeback against the Rams. I mean, nobody should have to come back against the Rams, but, hey, they got down by three touchdowns and they came back and they won the game. You've got the Saints who just kind of floundering around. And that team is so talented on offense. Something's just not right. How do you have all those guys? I mean, the only guy who's not there is Darren Sproles. I mean, was he the answer? I know they lost one of their wide receivers. I wish I could remember his name. Obviously not the most important guy because, you know, because they're making this Cooks kid looks really good, and Colston's still there.
I think
Jimmy
Robert
Graham.
Meacham's gone.
Yes, Robert Meacham was the guy I was thinking of. So, yeah, you're not looking this bad because Robert Meacham and Darren Sproles are gone. You've still got Mark Ingram and Pierre Thomas. And I mean, you know, the one guy we haven't mentioned, obviously, is Drew Brees. And they didn't even get a touchdown until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, there's
a lot
of garbage
38 to 17 sounds like, oh, you know, it could have been close. This game was never close. This game was close at the coin toss, and that was about it.
For those of you fellow stat heads like me who are looking at New Orleans offensive ranks and saying, well, it's not nearly as bad as everyone says because I wanted to go there. I wanted to be the guy to say, hold your horses. New Orleans isn't nearly as dead in the water as they seem because they're still 11th in the NFL in rushing yards per game, and third in passing yards per game.
Right.
They're not that far, but there's a lot of bad stats coming there. There's a lot of dead time or garbage time stats when you look back at the actual games that Drew Brees and the Saints are racking up. So it's something to worry about. I do still think that they're not that far away from clicking, but it is something to worry about and keep your eye on. That is the Dallas Cowboys defense that they went out there and struggled against for the first half, which I admit I didn't see the first half because I was busy with all of the things I was doing, but I did see the second half, and by that time the game was over. But yeah, I definitely did not expect that at all. I expected the Dallas defense to, you know, collapse under Drew Brees and that offense, and it didn't work out for them. Tony Romo has been quite the revelation ever since that first game against San Francisco. He's been on fire. It's, you know, only three games. It's a small sample size, but he certainly looked a lot better than I thought he was going to look after that first game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we could probably go through, we're not going to do this, we could go through all 32 teams so far and figure out, hey, who have we overestimated and who have we underestimated here, you know, and who were we dead on about? And I think we've both underestimated the Cowboys so far.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I took them. I mean, it wasn't the popular pick, clearly, because they were the home dog in this game. You know, I mean, coming out of that game, though, if this game was being played again, if this was a rematch, I don't think they'd be the home dog again this week.
No, I would agree with that.
Let's talk about your boy.
Which boy would this be?
Mike Mr. Glennon.
Jeez, that idiot. So I didn't really see the highlights of that one. I kind of know what happened, but not really. How? It's Mike Glennon. How did Tampa beat? The small little story about that game that's kind of funny is I'm the crew of people that are driving back from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which is 3 hours from here, where we cleaned out my mother-in-law's house. Part of that crew is the maid of honor at our wedding, Judy, who's a humongous Pittsburgh Steelers fan. She was having trouble keeping up with scores in the U-Haul because of the bad frequency. We were sort of in between Memphis and Murfreesboro when we pulled over to get a bite to eat. And she's asking me, am I keeping up? Am I able to get a better signal? Which I was, and I was listening to some scores. And then the McDonald's we stopped in actually had a television, so I was actually, it had the Bears game on, so I was able to see some scores on the bottom line. So I informed her as we pulled off and got ready to make the last leg of our trip that the Steelers were indeed leading the Buccaneers by 7 points. And she started an absolute complete victory dance in the parking lot because they were leading the Buccaneers, and of course the Buccaneers aren't going to come back and beat the Steelers late. It's the Buccaneers. It's Mike Glennon. I'm serious, Jason. She completely got down and boogied in the parking lot, and I'm the one, as much as I hate Glennon, I was the one trying to tell her, well, you know, the game's not over yet, Judy. Come on. It's Tampa Bay. They're not going to come back. I did not get to see Judy later on that evening, but I can only imagine her reaction when she got home and found out what happened, and my heart broke for her.
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, Tampa, I mean, they hung on. They shut them out in the fourth quarter. They stayed within four. It was interesting because they got into scoring range, you know, right around the two-minute warning. Could have kicked a field goal to make it a one-point game and then, you know, tried the onside kick or tried to kick them deep. But they went for it, and they failed. So Pittsburgh's got the ball, you know, deep in their own territory. Tampa's got two timeouts left. Pittsburgh just needs to get a first down to win the game against Tampa. Can't get the first down. punch the ball back with about 40 seconds left to go. Glennon gets him down the field, gets him quickly right down there, right down almost to the goal line. And then they just start firing into the end zone, and, Vincent Jackson makes a great catch. I will give him that, wide open, but he made
was that a catch. Was that
a
prevent-you-from-win defense that Pittsburgh let Mike Glennon drive right down the field on him?
No, it wasn't really so much the prevent from winning. I think it was more of a – they just sort of surprised – I think they just kind of caught him off guard. They weren't afraid to use the middle of the field. And a lot of times when you're playing the team with no timeouts and that little time left, you're going to be protecting the sideline.
Right.
They had they attacked the middle, got up quick, spiked the ball, managed the – I mean, you want to talk about a team that got down there quick. It doesn't also help that I believe Pittsburgh shanked the punt, so it gave them an even shorter field. Steelers just melted down. I mean, the Tampa hung in tough the whole game, especially after getting embarrassed so badly at Atlanta the week before. Just did not see that. Didn't see it coming. Neither one of us saw that coming. I mean, neither one of us had the stones to take Tampa to win that game.
Or even to stay close. I thought it was going to be a complete blowout.
But it was just... I'm wondering if that team... Because, you brought up the Mike Glennon stats, and he played mediocre last year. Didn't play bad, didn't play good. He was just sort of there. But did he play bad enough to lose his job to McClown? I'm wondering if that team kind of rallied around Glennon in this game. I can't but help but wonder that.
My question to you was going to be, since I didn't see any of it, I obviously have a clear blind spot to Mike Glennon. Whatever talent he might have, I'm not going to admit it. I'm not going to be able to see it. So, Jason, I ask you, is Mike Glennon decent?
He is mediocre. I mean, his stats for the game...
Is that above
mediocre
or below decent? I can't tell.
That would be slightly below decent.
Okay.
Decent, how'd he do? He's decent. How's he? He's mediocre. You get the good with the bad. I mean, he was right down the middle. 50% completion percentage, like an 80 quarterback rating, couple touchdowns, a pick, 300 yards. I mean, Roethlisberger, hell of a game. By all measurable statistics, Pittsburgh should have just blown these guys away. Tampa didn't run the ball particularly effectively. I mean, everything up and down says it should have been Pittsburgh's game. But Tampa just hung in there. And I give them all the credit because that was definitely a game nobody expected them to win.
My Mike Glennon hate for the record stems from when I think of the mediocre quote unquote quarterbacks that we saw last year. When you think of Christian Ponder, Chad Henne, the guys of that ilk, the list goes on. And the talk from certain experts was not of mediocrity, but of what a breath of fresh air this Mike Glennon is, how much better he was than Josh Freeman, who got jettisoned out of Tampa Bay shortly after the season began. This Mike Glennon guy, he might be the future of Tampa. And I'm like, what? To me, he wasn't any better than Christian Ponder, Chad Henne, et cetera, et cetera. But because of all the, Matt Castle, but because of all the love that he got from certain people, it just made me sort of turn on him. I'll admit he wasn't as bad as I was making him out to be. Maybe he is mediocre. Now, Richard Sherman doesn't have much use for someone who's mediocre, but as you said, there is some good in that, because if he was just bad, you would just say he's bad. And clearly,
right.
I guess he's not bad. I'll admit that. As much as it pains me to say, I'll admit Mike Glennon appears to be not bad.
And I almost wonder if was he mediocre enough or bad enough or even good enough. I mean, no matter what happened, Lovie Smith came in and just decided, I'm not starting this guy. Even this week, shockingly.
Josh is my quarterback.
Shockingly, Lovie would not commit to just naming Glennon the starter for this week. After the just diarrhea that Josh McClown put all over the field at the quarterback position in the first 3 weeks. And then Glennon goes to Pittsburgh, gets you a last-second touchdown, and you still won't commit to the guy? I don't know if that's just head games, or they don't want to, you know, don't know what that is, or if it's just Lovie being Lovie.
Gets you out of the winless column.
Yeah. It makes up for that total embarrassment that they suffered at the hand of Atlanta. I mean, and gets you the win. You should have been like, that's it, he's starting. You know, until his legs fall off or his arm falls off or, you know, he beats his kids.
Well, throws his wife on a bed of guns.
That's right.
I think that's Lovie being Lovie. From the little bit I could tell of his personality, he's so guarded. But I think that's the type of coach he is. He's very loyal.
He was always very hesitant, even in Chicago, very hesitant with the quarterback controversy stuff. I mean, look at what happened. All those games they won with the backup that year. I forget who the backup was. As soon as Rex Grossman came back, they put him right in there again.
It was Ortman.
Yeah, it was Ortman, who's starting this week, by the way.
DJ Emmanuel is out. Kyle Ortman's in.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute, because I didn't see that. I didn't see that coming at all. You don't draft someone as high as EJ Manuel. You don't go 2-2. This guy's in his second year. Do you just shit can him for Kyle Orton? What?
And another big reason no one saw that coming is because all the scuttlebutt has been that the Buffalo coach, Doug Marrone, did not like the entire idea of bringing Kyle Orton in because he thought it undermined EJ Manuel. And then after 3 games, goodbye EJ Manuel. Don't need you. Let's go with this Orkman guy. Very strange. The whole thing's very strange. I think Buffalo is going to rank right up there with Oakland and Miami and Tampa and Jacksonville as just mismanaged teams with coaches that aren't really fit for their roles and, you know, management that doesn't quite know what they're doing. I think Buffalo, unfortunately, goes right in there in that same category because this just doesn't make any sense to me. Kyle Orton is just nothing but a backup quarterback at this stage of his career. Again, with the scuttlebutt, with the rumors and the reporting that I read on Twitter and in certain other online publications and whatnot, is that Orton is sort of a mercenary at this point. He doesn't even like playing football anymore. He's just there because they're paying him a pretty hefty salary to be a backup
quarterback. It's all about the money.
It's all about the money. And so now you're going to hand this guy the reins. I guess his play will tell just how much his heart is into the game and how much he's into the money. Because I'm sure the first couple of times he gets a chance to make a play when there's traffic around him, when there's guys trying to bring him down, will he step up in the pocket? Will he just make the play without regard for who's around him? Or will he just, you know, cover the football up and turtle up and try not to get hurt? You know, I guess the first few times we see that, we'll be able to tell what his motivations are.
And I'll tell you what, over the last 3, 4, 5 years, I mean, and I'm sure it's happened. I mean, we could go back and I'm sure we have specific examples, but not so much with the surefire guys that have failed, but we've seen a lot of teams reach for quarterbacks. And everybody understands they're reaching for a quarterback. Because there's a run of quarterbacks, these first-round quarterbacks, a lot, and all these teams, for the most part, are getting burned.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ponder, Locker, Manuel, Geno Smith. I mean, the list goes on of all of these stretch picks that these teams are making, just ruining franchises.
Yeah, well, you kind of understand why, though, because you know if you don't have the franchise quarterback, you're in a very, very deep hole. There's only so many teams that can put together great offenses around a mediocre, you know, game-managing quarterback or great defenses, you know, depending on your thoughts about Russell Wilson. Back to, is Russell Wilson great? If you think he's the best game managing quarterback in the game, which is what I think, or if you actually think he's a great quarterback, one way or another, there's very few organizations that can put the talent around a guy who's not, you know, whatever you think of Russell Wilson, he's not Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Andrew Luck.
Right.
You know,
do you know what I do think of Russell Wilson, though? Russell Wilson was a third-round quarterback.
And not much risk to take him at that stage.
Right.
That's correct.
I mean, other than Andrew Luck, who's the stud who's come out in the last 5 years? Who's the young stud quarterback right now other than Andrew Luck? Am I missing someone?
He's extremely inconsistent, but Andy Dalton has the tools to be that guy.
He does, and he was a very – was he his first-round pick, or did he sneak second round?
He might have been a second-round pick, I believe.
But, I mean, he would have, if he was a second-round pick, he was, like, the first pick.
Like right,
the
yeah, right at the top
of
the second
round.
Just like Geno Smith.
Right, right. But and Andy Dalton, though, he's one of the few who you've actually seen who's, like, growing and maybe maturing. Andy Dalton's not, and ever since he's come in, maybe he went into a really good situation. You have, other than in the playoffs, you haven't really seen Andy Dalton go out there and just shit the bed. Andy Dalton hasn't been the reason the Bengals go out and lose games. And you're seeing a lot of these young quarterbacks just get thrown to the wolves, and it's ugly to watch. It's really ugly to watch the bad quarterback play in this league.
Yeah, but you go with the physical talents, and you try to throw them out there so that they can learn what not to do so that in the future they'll be good enough to use those physical talents to be good. I guess I see your point. Who's coming in, and besides Andrew Luck, and doesn't seem to have to get over any kind of learning curve or mistakes. They can just go right in and start playing football. It doesn't seem to work out, you know, with the Ryan Tannehills and the Ponders and all that. They have their growing pains that they all have to go through, and some of them fall by the wayside, and some of them actually grow from it and become something.
And well, that's the thing. Who's actually growing out of these young quarterback groups? Who's getting better? Everybody's gone in, stunk, and is basically at risk of being benched. There's so many guys who, in the last few years, all these high-round draft picks who are no better today than when they were drafted at all. And that might not be their fault. But
yeah,
you've got all these guys who are – but the problem, I think, is that these guys were all drafted way too high. They were drafted way too high, paid way too much money, and there's just nothing around them. When those first-round picks probably should have been used for, offensive linemen, wide receivers, some players that you could take these quarters. Everybody's so afraid they're not going to get that quarterback. All these teams are reaching, and they're just tanking. And very few of these teams are going to be in the playoffs at all. It's going to be the same guys. It's going to be the established quarterbacks. There's no, like, young blood really coming in and stirring this up at all.
Well, how do you propose to defeat that problem? Do you just wait on a quarterback until the third or fourth round and get the game manager and hope that you can build around them? Or how do you do that? Because if you overlook the Jay Cutler-type arm, or the Eli Manning type arm or the Cam Newton type arm, and you go, well, I don't want to take him, as high as he's supposed to go because it's such a big risk. It's a risk to not take him either, because if you don't take him and he turns out to actually be very good, then everyone's looking at you going, why didn't you draft him again?
Yeah, I just think you see a lot of teams that are panicking, and the teams that aren't at the draft, a lot of teams that aren't panicking in the draft. They're building their teams. They're picking up these players. Some of these teams have the luxury of a good starting quarterback, and they can bring in a guy and bring him in slowly. I just feel so bad for some of these teams and some of these guys that are getting drafted, just getting thrown to the wolves. They're terrible. Their confidence gets shot too quickly. You know, I mean, we forget that, you know, like, some of the great quarterbacks were awful their first season. Peyton Manning didn't look that great his first season. Was it Troy Aikman? Was he 1-15 his first season?
Yes.
And then you get into the second season, you should see a little bit of growth. And E.J. Manuel now is in his second season, and he's 2-2, and they're benching him already. What are you doing to these guys? It's torpedoing these guys.
But who's going to grow under the coaching of Doug Marrone? Who the fuck is Doug Marrone? You know? Quarterback's going to grow under
Kyle
Rex
Orton
Ryan?
Will.
Oh, yeah, right. You know, what quarterback is Rex Ryan going to grow? You know, he had, you know, total fraud and now Geno Smith, but is it them or is it him? You know, I guess the argument is can be made one way, you know, in both directions, but I don't think anyone could grow under Rex Ryan. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing on offense. Same with, you know, Lovie Smith and a lot of other defensive type coaches. So I think it's a lot to do with where you go. You know, who's ready to teach you? What offensive minds are there ready to mold you? You know, Nick Foles is no great shakes, but you know he gets Chip Kelly and look at him go. So, you know, a lot of these busts probably would do very well, you know, under Chip Kelly, Mark Trestman, you know, certain offensive minds. You know, it's just a matter of who's there in charge when you get to that place that you get drafted to.
Yeah, it's you know, it's just the state of this league right now. And there's there's that lack of great college quarterbacks, because very few teams, I think, are running these pro-style offenses. You know,
yeah,
everything's all about let's get the most athletic guy we can on the field and have him play quarterback. And then he gets to the NFL, it's a different league, and these guys aren't ready. So, I you know, maybe we're getting really deep with the quarterback stuff here, but a lot of it comes from college, which is why it's so hard to evaluate these guys coming out.
That's a great point. I was going to talk about that a little bit. It's so hard to watch college football to me because so many of these coaches are just trying to exploit the little boys out there on the field playing defense and run these flippy floppy, you know, gimmick offenses to take advantage of all of them and rack up 600 yards of offense and 40 points a game. And you cannot possibly evaluate, you know, what's going to work in the NFL because that crap isn't going to work. You don't know if that quarterback's any good at all, but these coaches are just trying to, you know, make as much money as they can for themselves by running up, you know, all the, you know, the June Jones offense, and, you know, everyone's trying to do that. And Kevin Sumlin and, you know, all these other offensive geniuses, it really is impossible to evaluate like that.
Yeah. So you get no indicator from college how good these guys are going to be in the pros. These guys are all getting drafted based on, like you said, all these inflated college stats. You know, we could all look at Tim Tebow and saying, that's not an NFL quarterback. I looked at Johnny Manziel. I thought the same thing. He's the right-handed Tim Tebow. You know, throwing jump passes to receivers. You just happen, you know, jump up in a crowd of four guys and come down with a ball. That happens in the NFL a lot, by the way. Happens
the
time.
Oh, yeah.
It might happen once, because as soon as he jumps in the air and throws that pass, some D-lineman, 300-pound D-lineman, lays on him and cracks all of his ribs.
I was going to say, when he comes down, James Harrison is waiting for him, and he just buries him under the grass.
Yeah, so, yeah, that might look good in college, but, you know, these are all the guys sitting in the green room on draft day. And I think this is part of the reason why you're seeing a lot of these top-name quarterbacks or winning quarterbacks now are later-round picks, because teams are scouting and realizing, you know, you can tell who the smart teams are because they're kind of looking for those hidden gems. and they're finding these guys. And those are the guys who are succeeding. The guys who you didn't really have a whole lot of expectations for going into the season. Now they're the guys.
Boy,
and it's funny that you're watching all these first half of the first round guys just flame out completely. And these middle and late round picks are thriving.
Didn't we all know when Brady Quinn was going through that whole green room fiasco that would be the most famous he would ever be? Didn't we all know he was going to be no good at football?
Brady Quinn was horrible. But he played for Notre Dame. What about Jimmy Clausen? Same thing.
Oh, my God. Well, at least he didn't go in the first round.
No, but still, everybody knew he's a bum.
Yeah.
And he went to the NFL, and immediately, he's a bum. I guess Cam Newton has been maybe the other successful one. I think the jury's still out on Cam Newton, though, huh?
He's shown flashes of greatness. I don't know if that counts to what you're looking for. You know, if Andrew Luck is the gold, you know, the gold measure, you know, obviously Cam Newton's below that, but he's obviously not E.J. Manuel, Geno Smith, Christian Ponder. He's definitely somewhere in the middle. It's just, you know, in certain days he looks like he leans more towards, you know, Geno Smith, and certain days he leans more towards Andrew Luck. He's as inconsistent as it gets, really.
Yeah, but you know, Cam Newton's never really he might lean towards Geno Smith some days, but Geno Smith leans towards Geno Smith every day.
Well, he can't help it. He's Geno Smith.
Well,
he
yeah,
can't help
I mean,
lean towards Geno Smith.
That's like Lou Gehrig getting Lou Gehrig's disease. What are the odds?
Go figure. So a new kid coming in, having his rookie start and having success. It wasn't Blake Bortles. It wasn't the first pick in the draft last year. It was the last pick of the first round, Teddy Bridgewater.
Yep.
And because you're a Falcons fan, I assume you watched most or all of that. So I ask you, was that the start of something? Was that Bridgewater or was that the Atlanta defense?
Well, it was a little of both. Teddy Bridgewater looked good. I mean, they ran simple plays for him. Atlanta was just too horrible to figure him out on defense. Boy, is that Jekyll and Hyde, or what, that Atlanta team. It's just amazing at home and crap on the road. If it's that easy all year, we've got some easy wins coming up picking these games. If it's that easy.
They're doing what New Orleans usually does.
On the road. Yeah. Just or Seattle used to do. You know, they couldn't win on the road. They'd always win at home. Tremendous home field advantage. Matt Ryan, though, has a great record at home. But he looked good. But we talked about this during the summertime. When we occasionally talked about football, was I talked about that Teddy Bridgewater looked like the most, like he looked like an NFL quarterback out of that whole group.
Right.
But he wasn't getting any run because he's, you know, he's more of a pocket type passer. He's black and a pocket passer. You can't have that. They've all got to just be, you know, all these black guys who play quarterback, I got to run around and look crazy and, you know, and blow their knees out just standing around. But we talked about that. If Teddy Bridgewater was white, he's probably a top five pick.
You're right.
I hate to say it. I hate to bring race into it. You know, I don't want to be like Jason Whitlock here and just say everything. You know? Because
well,
it's not. But yeah, but I both my eyes face forward.
Oh man.
You know, and I don't look like I just ate myself.
We knew as it got late, it was going to break down into something that we say that's not exactly kosher. And
that's
Teddy
Bridgewater looked like an NFL quarterback playing his first game, but with composure. Not like a lot of these other guys who just can't hold up to it. And Atlanta kept coming back. I mean, Atlanta was at 28-27 late in that game, and they just kept going, and eventually Teddy Bridgewater got hurt, and that's one of the knocks on him is he can't stay on the field. So let's hope it's not another one of these types of situations where the guy looks good, but he just can't stay on the field, and he'll be a career backup because you just can't trust him with your team. But, you know, Matt Stafford turned it around eventually.
That's true. Bridgewater's going to try to make it onto the field tomorrow night. He's got a game. He's got a very short week, but we don't know. Thank you. He is completely up in the air game time decision for Thursday night football. It's the Minnesota Vikings up in your neck of the woods against the Green Bay Packers coming off their great performance against the Bears. Aaron Rodgers says just relax it because he was playing the Bears. He knew you could just relax about that.
Yeah, there was a lot of social media up here that said, Jay Cutler, I hope you never retire.
Yeah, well, there's a good reason for that. So with no knowledge at all if Bridgewater will be there or if it'll be Christian Ponder instead for Minnesota, I give you Minnesota plus 7 and a hook at the Packers.
I you know, no contingency here. I'm not going to get cute. I'll just take Green Bay Thursday night, short week. These home teams have just been killing it on Thursday night. I don't see any reason for that to change.
These home teams have been killing it except for last week.
Well, yeah.
Kirk Cousins
killed it.
But I will agree with you. I will take the Packers. I don't think the Vikings can do that again. And getting it just under the wire, as we are wont to do sometimes, we are now into the VIP after-show portion of the program at 11:30, both of our local times, which means this after show will probably not last very long.
Yeah, it'll probably be short, but yeah, I'm glad these Thursday night games haven't been highlight game level matchups, because we leave ourselves like 45 seconds to do these picks for these Thursday night games.
I know.
There's a little more football theory than football tonight. I kind of like that. We actually, got to stretch the brain muscles out a little bit. It just wasn't a whole lot going on this week that just jumped out at me. It's like, oh, man, I got to talk about that. But since we have you in the air, let's talk about your Bears.
Yeah. That game is not, to me, indicative of anything, because there's nothing unusual that happened. That game went pretty much exactly the way I thought it was going to go. I'd never thought the Bears were going to get shut out or shut down. They always have a fighter's chance because of their offense, because of the coach Mark Trestman, because of Jay Cutler, the best quarterback in the history of Chicago football, because of Matt Forte, because Brandon Marshall gutting through his pain and hobbling around, and Alshon Jeffrey. The Bears always have a fighting chance in every game. They just don't have a chance against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, because Aaron Rodgers knows how to slice, dice, fillet, and cut up the Chicago Bears' back end, unlike any other quarterback. Although I think if all other decent quarterbacks got a shot at the Bears' back end as much as Aaron Rodgers does, that they would also learn how to slice, dice, and fillet. Matthew Stafford, I'm sure, can slice and dice the Bears probably better than just about any other quarterback in the league besides Aaron Rodgers, because he gets to practice and play them twice a year. So there's no surprise there to me. Of course, Aaron Rodgers, you bounced back, and of course the Packers' offense got on track. They were playing against the Bears' defense. The Bears' defense is still awful. For all the money they spent, for all the draft picks they spent, the defense is still bad, and they're not going to be able to overcome that in the long run, unfortunately. They're still fun as hell to watch, but this didn't alter my trajectory or thought pattern for the Bears at all. I still think they're going to squeak into the playoffs at 9-7, although if they lost one more game because of that defense and went 8-8 and missed the playoffs, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised at that. But in the long run, I still think they have a tremendous offense, they're still tremendously exciting, and they're still fatally flawed with that defense, and it's just not going to be something that they can overcome in the end. And Cutler's interceptions, that again, that's par for the course. He's not perfect. He does that sometimes. He's great at other times. That's why you have him. But yes, he does throw some bad picks at times.
Yeah, I mean, and before the season started, I took the Lions to win the division. The Lions probably look like the most. What's the word I want to use? I want to say, let's call them not the most, but let's call them the least like scattershot team in that division. They actually seem like the easiest team to kind of read right now, which was hard to believe after the Jim Schwartz years. We haven't necessarily read what they're going to do correctly, but hindsight, always lends itself. They're doing what they need to do. The Packers have looked, they haven't looked quite like themselves. And the Bears are just doing what they do, right? This is Bears football. You got to love it or hate it. This is how they are. What really stands out to me is, Aaron Rodgers just torched that secondary, which you expected him to. It's so depleted. That defense in the back end is so awful.
Even when all the guys are there, they're still running the cover zero, where they're just guys running free. Look at me. I'm free. I'm in the open field, and nobody's around me.
He didn't waste his time spreading that around. That ball was either going to Jordy Nelson or Randall Cobb. That was it.
He threw his first two passes to some tight end also named Rogers that no one ever heard of.
Yep.
And he just spent the rest of the time filleting the back end with Cobb and Nelson.
Loosen them up a little bit. Make them think we're going to throw it to the tight end. And we're just going to go to the two wide receiver playmakers that we have. It really makes me wonder, you know, with Green Bay. Could you imagine what that offense would look like if they had a stud wide receiver? You know, I'm not talking. I'm not, you know, because you know, we could talk all day about Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. Those guys leave town and go to another team. They're nondescript. That's like Eric Decker leaving the Broncos and going to the Jets. You know, if Jordy Nelson went to Jacksonville, he'd suck. You know, I'm just saying, if Randall Cobb if Randall Cobb went to Oakland, he'd be James Jones. He wouldn't be any good. So, if James Jones went to Oakland and became James Jones, you know, this is just what happens. And so it's like, man, could you imagine if he had like a Calvin Johnson or a Dez Bryant or an AJ, like a stud wide receiver. And it's like, and I'm thinking back with the Packers, you know, all these years with Favre, with Rodgers, I think it's a testament to how good those guys were at quarterback that they never really had that stud great number one wide receiver. But these quarterbacks just keep getting the ball to these just guys. And with these guys, they go out there and they put up huge numbers. They get paid good money. And it's a testament to the quarterback. It's a, you know,
Greg Jennings left Green Bay and went to Minnesota and became Greg Jennings. So,
and if he catches a touchdown pass now, it's like sirens go off. It's like a huge deal. Greg Jennings has an appearance. It's like you'd think I thought he was retired. You know? Oh, no, wait, there he is. He's playing for the Vikings. I mean,
which is basically being retired.
Yeah, so a lot of these Packer receivers, they go elsewhere. They just go places to die because they don't have that guy throwing them the ball. And Aaron Rodgers put on a clinic against the Bears. No punts in that game.
Yeah, either way.
Either way. Nobody had to punt the ball because it was either a touchdown for the Packers or a turnover for the Bears.
I didn't see highlights for this either, but I'll bow down and give props to Detroit for using Megatron Calvin Johnson as a prop, as a decoy all game, and lighting up the New York Jets with receivers you'd never heard of. And the thing about that is you kind of knew they were going to do that. You heard about how bad Calvin Johnson was hobbling all week. You heard that he was a game-time decision. There was a good chance that he might not play, and he makes it on the field anyway. You have to think that he's going to be nothing but a decoy, and sure enough, that's what he was. And the Jets still let Matthew Stafford light him up through the air with other guys while they're, you know, still trying to cover Calvin Johnson as if he's going to be a threat. So bravo to the Lions for pulling that off.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, and this is what we talk about. You know, we're making the excuses for Tom Brady that, oh, you know, it takes time to gel and he's got to, well, you know what? There's other quarterbacks going out there missing guys or not with the best guys, and they're getting it done. And
Tom Brady doesn't have the physical stature of Matthew Stafford.
No.
I don't think a lot of people want to hear that. Tom Brady's an old man. He's physically, he's just not,
he's 37.
An athletic quarterback. Yeah, he's a 37-year-old quarterback. He's, you know, he doesn't have a rocket arm.
Yep.
You know, he does need time to gel with his guys. It's an excuse, but it's also the truth. You know,
but
Matthew
you
Stafford
to,
doesn't.
You need to get that guy help. You can't keep, you know, when Aaron Rodgers is 37, if he has the same guys he has around him, that team's not as good as they are.
Did you check out the Roto World piece that says that Aaron Dobson, who would be a very nice weapon for Tom Brady to have out there right now, is specifically being benched because he had a shouting match or mouthed off to Boy Wonder Josh McDaniels a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
And is just being punished, basically. So Tom Brady gets to look at Brandon LaFell and Danny Amendola running around out there and looking at Aaron Dobson on the sideline going, I wish I had him in there. He might actually help me, but because Boy Wonder pissed him off, and he mouthed off to him. He apparently was being put in the doghouse.
Well, it'll be an interesting game with the. I have a feeling we'll be talking about that Cincinnati New England game this week.
That is a highlight game if there ever was one. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care how much we've talked about either one of those teams. That is, there's storylines with that because, you know, you can talk about the up-and-coming team versus possibly the team that's fading, you know, can the Patriots gut one out? It's a primetime game. I mean, if you're going to you cannot show up like that two times in a row in primetime, can you? You cannot get embarrassed. And this is not a good spot for them because Cincinnati, they're pretty good.
I was about to say, you can if Cincinnati keeps playing the way they've been playing and they're coming off a bye.
Well, if this game was in Cincinnati, oh boy.
Ooh.
But I think, it's in New England, maybe that will help them. I'm not going to give away a pick here, but being in New England, if this game was in Cincinnati, I think they could be looking at 2 weeks of embarrassment in a row, especially against a team coming off the bye.
But this is interesting. I'm not giving away a pick either, but when I think of New England in prime time and everyone thinking they're struggling and they're in deep, deep trouble and the dynasty might be over, I think of last year and Peyton Manning and the Broncos come in and everyone thinks that they're just going to run all over the Patriots, and somehow the Patriots pull out a victory out of their ass in the snow.
Oh, yeah.
And you never know. You just never know. Once it clicks for Tom Brady and his weapons, it really clicks. But we don't know exactly when that's going to happen. So maybe it'll be this Sunday. Who knows?
Yeah, a little teaser for the next show.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else before we go?
Yeah, just a few more points. They're going to be really quick, rapid fire. As bad as I might feel about 4-8-1 in week 4, did you check out our buddy at the Yahoo blog?
I didn't this week because we were so awful.
How about 2-11? He gets the loss for the San Francisco pick because he decided to go with a 5.5-point line.
Well, you know, even if we gave him that as a push,
it's still 2-10.
That's still 2-10-1.
Yeah.
Neither one of us would be excited about 2-10-1. I will say, and I mentioned this in the blog, that push, that 5-point push, felt like a win for me. I had no business. I had no business the way that the Niners dominated the Eagles. I had absolutely no business being anywhere near not having to have that game count against us.
Okay, wait. I didn't see the highlight at all. Didn't Philly lead that game?
Well, here's the thing. Philadelphia scored no offensive points.
All 21 were on defense?
Yes, that was a blocked punt.
Okay.
A punt return and a pick six.
Wow.
They only gained, I want to say, something like 190 yards of offense. It was brutal. And they only possessed the ball for about 18 minutes. It was just domination by the 49ers, and I got a push out of that. I'll take that all day long.
Okay, that's very interesting. Well, I didn't get the win, but apparently that went the way that I thought, too, that Philadelphia's D is just going to die at the end of these games because they're just on the field too damn much.
Yeah, how do you – I mean, yeah, 17 and some change time of possession for the Philadelphia Eagles. They couldn't get anything going. I mean, I know San Francisco was coming off of losing that game at home to the Bears. They probably didn't want to start 0-2 in the new building. But, you know, San Francisco, again, yes, they won, but they still looked sloppy, made stupid plays. They gave up 3 non-offensive touchdowns. 3. You know, so, yeah, you probably should have won that game 38-3. But you only won that game 26-21, and the Eagles were in that game when they had no business being. And that's how you lose games, by the way. That's how you line it up. You let a team hang around when they have absolutely no business of being out on, you know, even sniffing the game. Those are the teams that sometimes those bite you in the ass. I'm still not sold on the 49ers.
That's how you steeler it up, apparently.
Yeah, that's how you lose to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, yeah.
Oh, my God. Did Carolina not know that Steve Smith was going to play against them Sunday? What, did they not know he was on the field?
Well, yeah, we didn't. I think we both outthought ourselves on that one. I think we outsmarted ourselves a little bit and did not estimate or underestimate the impact that that guy. He probably had that Baltimore team so fired up, ready to play that game. And that's, boy, that's two stinkers in a row for Carolina.
Yes, because I picked them both the last 2 weeks. That's my new Kansas City. I'm 0-4 with Carolina, and probably not going to break that anytime soon because I can't get a read on them at all.
Well, that's good because they get your Bears this week.
Oh, wow.
So if you pick the Panthers, you'll get your team a win. Think about it that way.
Uh-huh. Reverse psychology, huh?
Yeah.
The only other thing I wanted to bring up was just something random that I was thinking of because I'm catching up on my podcast, listening with all the traveling and stuff that I've been doing. I'm back a little bit, so I'm listening to all the Adrian Peterson stuff and some remnants of the Ray Rice stuff and the Gloria Allred press conference that brought some of Brandon Marshall's misdeeds to light, and he had to respond to that with a really terrible press conference, 45 minutes of rambling and woe is me. And I'm thinking of all of, I'm going back listening to all of that, and the thought pops in my mind, remember the whole Roger Goodell fiasco thing? It was going to ruin his career, and the NFL is going to lose all these sponsors like Pepsi and Anheuser-Busch, and Goodell is going to be fired, and people are flying banners over stadiums calling for him to be fired, misspelling his name. Remember all of that? Remember Roger Goodell was going to lose his job and it was just going to be imminent? Remember all that? Boy, that was fun.
Yeah, that blew away. That blew over quick, didn't it?
Uh-huh. And what did I say? He's not losing his job. He makes them way too much money.
And way now, we better say Redskins here quick as many times as we can before we get fined.
It's about
so
to
real
become,
quick, real quick.
About to become
Redskins,
the R word.
Redskins, Redskins,
Redskins,
Redskins,
Redskins, Redskins,
Redskins.
Monday night, the world champions against the Redskins.
The
can
Redskins,
Mike Tirico avoid? Yes. Can Mike Tirico avoid saying the word Redskins? Can John Gruden avoid saying it? John Gruden can't avoid anything because he's an idiot. Yeah, it's about to become as bad as the N-word, apparently. So hurry up and get all of them in.
Do you watch primetime TV? It's some pretty. You got dudes like eating people. You can watch a little Hannibal. You can watch people basically having sex on any of these ABC shows anytime you want, like softcore porn now. But don't say Redskins. You're getting fined.
That's right. That is the worst crime in humanity, apparently.
Yeah, watch a little CSI. Watch guys' brains getting blown out and people getting cut apart. But don't say Redskins.
Are we doing the picks Friday night this week?
Yeah, I'm not turning around and doing another show tomorrow night. If you're back, I'm fine with Friday.
I am back. I do not have to leave town again until I go on a cruise next May, I don't believe. Or actually until I come up to with you for the next fantasy baseball draft, which you finished in the money. Congratulations.
We managed to sneak in a fourth place finish. Had bumped up to third a couple of days. But the points just weren't there. You know, we traded away so much offense in order to make up for our lack of pitching, which isn't like us. That was the tough thing about this year. I mean, yeah, you're always happy when you're in the top because you're in the money, but our tried and true pitching equation, which we won't give away here on the air, kind of let us down this year. And it didn't let us down to the point where I think we're just going to throw it away and scrap it, because this has been the exception to the rule this season.
Right.
But the 5 or 6 points that we traded away in rotisserie style league in offense probably got us somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 points or so in pitching. You know, we actually ended up finishing with one of the better ERAs and better whips in the league, and by the around the trade deadline, we were dead last almost in both. So, didn't necessarily show up in the win column. We had so many bullpen implosions steal wins from us in the last month and a half, but that's always been the case with us. We're always snake bit with wins.
Yeah.
You know, we watched
so hard to predict wins.
We watched so many huge leads just evaporate. Chris Tillman got robbed. I mean, Hiroki Kuroda pitched a great game in that, you know, the Derek Jeter comeback game, you know, the one where he won the game. Well, the only reason he got a chance to even bat in the bottom of the ninth was because Dave Robertson blew a three-run lead that stole the win away from us. And those wins actually ended up probably being what costed us third place. Because we had moved up quite a bit in wins, 3 or 4 points, and then in the last couple of weeks we couldn't win a game to save our lives. But our pitchers were still going out there and being efficient, you know, good ERA, not getting a lot of guys on base. So I would say this is one of the years we kind of maneuvered our way into fourth, because if we hadn't made any moves, we were probably sitting on a sixth-place team, because we would have had the best offense by far and the worst pitching.
You pulled a Billy Beane. Against your strengths, and you went for it. You had to do some string pulling and to go for what you could make points out of, and it worked out better for you than it did for Billy Beane, huh?
Yes, I would say yes. We also managed to it's typical for us, but we also managed to do it the Billy Beane way, in that we were the team in the league that spent the least amount of money for the whole year.
Are we calling it Jason Ball now?
I guess so, because we for some reason we don't make a lot of moves that we don't make needless moves, I think is the thing. As soon as I have a guy get injured, I don't jump on the waiver wire and grab a replacement. A lot of times, we usually come out of the draft with a bench of players that we can tap into, or a couple minor league guys who don't start the year in the majors, but they come up in the middle of the season. So a lot of times we have ready-made players to come up versus having to tap into the free agent pool, which costs a ton of money.
Right.
I don't mind being economical. I'm not cheap. I just, you know, I'm just not throwing money away.
I'm the black guy, so I could say if I was cheap, if I actually were.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure this league wouldn't function if it was 12 players like me. Nobody'd win any money.
I thought you were going to go somewhere. I thought you were going to say it wouldn't function if it was 12 black guys.
Oh, man.
But I can say that.
You can say that. You people.
What do you mean, you people? All right. You have a review of week 4. You have a recap up on our blog.
Surprisingly, I've been able to. I missed week 2, but I've been really trying hard to hang in there. I tell you what, buying this laptop was probably the best thing I ever did, because as sick as I've been, I've actually just been able to kind of like write this wherever, so I can sit on my couch or I can lay in bed. It's actually been kind of nice to have this laptop, because I've been able to write recaps and look things up. Where with a desktop computer, when you're not feeling very good, you just don't want to sit there. You just sit there and stare at the screen and go, I'm so mad at the world right now. And you just don't want to type anything. But with a laptop, it's kind of easy. Good investment here on the laptop for me. And I'd like to thank everyone of the Ad Hack Baseball League for paying for it.
There you go. Just like you thanked them a year that you bought your wife her engagement ring, right?
Yes, they also bought my wife the engagement ring. I did thank them all for that. That was a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my computer. They bought my computer that's upstairs, not being used very much since I bought the laptop. So, you know, so this is the new thing, you know. I'm glad I won the money, because I would have really been hurting had I bought this and then finished fifth.
Oh.
Then I'd be, oh, man, yeah. So I was sort of, you know, spending the money before it was won. I mean, Kenny Rogers wouldn't be very happy with me, because I counted my money while I was sitting at the table.
That's right. Can't do that. Got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them.
That's right. But no, it was a good purchase, and it's actually made doing this show a lot easier, because now I can tell you, I can do it in other parts of the house, and I don't get dirty looks from my wife when I get a little too loud on the show.
Awesome.
Yeah. We'll have
so
to have
you're.
some point during the off season when we get closer to baseball season. We should have our commissioner back on again. He won the league, so we'll have to congratulate him.
Yeah, he's the man.
Won the league, record pot this year. He won. I would say since I've been in the league, probably the second or third time, he's won. Congratulations to the commission if you're listening. We'll definitely have you on the show again before we get into the – yeah, so we can start making some trades.
That's right. Live on the air, live trading.
Because we traded all of our offense away. Oh, and I'll tell you what, thank God we don't – because we had Derek Norris on our team. Thank God they don't count caught stealing as one of the stats, because he just let the Kansas City Royals – run all over him. It looked like me playing baseball on the PlayStation.
Brought back Mike Piazza memories for me, because he was...
Oh, the old high-heat baseball Mike Piazza, where every throw to second base was four hops?
or real life, because it pretty much that's how it was in real life as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you watch any of that game with the Royals and the A's?
I watched most of it. I think starting in about the fourth or fifth, and all the way to when they tied it in the ninth, and then I had to check out.
Yeah, what I thought was interesting was that Oakland realized we need to trade our offense because we need pitching in the postseason, and then they get lit up in the play-in game.
I'm still amazed at that. Not them getting lit up by anybody. It's the fact that it was the Kansas City fucking Royals.
Who never left the yard. They scored 9 runs, did not leave the yard. They small-balled the hell out of the Oakland A's. I want to see them do that to Anaheim. That ain't happening.
I think Tim Kirkchin was on the Four Letter Network this morning talking about the Royals were... I think the first team maybe ever in history to make the playoffs while finishing last in the league in home runs and walks.
How
they
do score?
I don't know.
They hit by pitch?
They don't score. They win all their games 2-1 because of their bullpen. But they did it. They won the game. I was shocked.
What do you think? I know we're dragging on the show, but what do you think of the one game play-in format? I don't think I like it.
I'm old. Of course I don't like it. I remember when the NLCS and ALCS were only 5 games. Of course I'm not going to like this little one game bullshit playoff. It's a play-in game.
I mean,
it's not
honestly
a playoff. It's like the NCAA tournament, the first four. Whatever. It's a play-in game. You're not actually in the damn playoffs. October had not happened yet, and the Oakland A's were out of the playoffs already. They were never in the playoffs.
You just equated this to the play-in game.
It is.
That's what it is.
Playoffs?
I'd be perfectly okay. This sounds dumb, but I'd be perfectly okay with them taking 2 games off the regular season. Make it 160 games, because that's not enough. Make it 160 games. Do a 3-game series for the play-in series, right?
Right.
Make it simple. Let the team with the better record have all 3 games. Make it really hard for that bottom wild card team. Make it really hard. Make them play all 3 games in a 3-game series at the home of the other team, if they have to. Make
them
earn
rough.
It. Make them earn it, because generally you're the bottom wild card team. How good are you really? You know, like what happened today. I mean, San Francisco 8-0 on Pittsburgh. Done.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh, bye. Bye, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, as Pittsburgh and Oakland, do they feel like they were in the playoffs?
No, they lost game 163. That's all they did.
Yes.
And
that's all it is. It's all manufactured game 163s by Bud Selig to make up for the drama of the actual game 163s that they had a couple of years ago with Tampa Bay and I think the White Sox won a division on game 163 a few years back with a blackout game where everybody showed up in black, and it was pretty cool to watch. So let's manufacture that drama, that real drama, by making this fake drama of this one-game play-in game and ruin some team's season that had to play 162 games to make that one game, and then they're out already.
Right.
That,
so I think
that's
there's
terrible.
I think there's a tweak to this, so that would be my solution. Shave 2 games off of the regular season, put them in the playoffs, and that's it. And then you don't have to worry about travel because it can be at the home of the better record team. That's it.
I don't have a problem with that.
At least it feels like a series.
Yeah. The one game. Ugh.
And you also, you give an advantage a little bit to the teams that are in the playoffs because they get a few days rest, but not so much rest that they're rusty.
They're chilling. They're licking their wounds. They're setting up their rotations exactly the way they want.
Yep. Yeah, because
it's,
you can
it's
do that
so
3 days.
Unfair.
You can do that 3-game series. No days off. That's it.
Right.
You start it the day after the regular season, maybe the day after that in case there's play-in games. 3-game series, that's it. And then the playoffs start the next day. So you even give more of a disadvantage to the wild card team because they're just going to keep playing.
Yeah.
Unless they win it in 2 and then they get a day off. So there's the advantage for you. Win it in 2 so you get the day off so you can rest for the playoffs.
Yeah, I like it. I don't have a problem with that.
There we go. I thought about that today.
My solution would never work because the owners would never give up this many games. But as much as I love baseball, I don't think they have to do 162 either. I think they could shave 2 weeks off and have full playoff series after that with days off and all of that. So I would make it, you know, 150 games and start your 3-game series or make it a 5-game series. Make it 2 5-game series, the first 2 rounds of the playoffs leading up to the 7-game league championship series. That would be my solution. But that would never work because that would shave too many regular season games. That would take too much money out of the owner's pockets. And, of course, we know they don't make nearly enough money in Major League Baseball or the NBA or the NFL. They're all so poor. Franchises selling for $2 billion and shit. Ugh, all right.
I'll tell you the thing that you don't want, though, is you don't want to turn it into the NBA playoffs where it goes for, like, 4 months.
No, you do not. As much as I love basketball, that is just a death march. Who in the hell wants to watch a 7-game series between the Charlotte Bobcats and the New York Knicks or whatever? Who wants to watch that?
And it takes 3 weeks to play.
Oh, you do not deserve a 7-game playoff series just because you make the playoffs with a, you know, 38 and, what would that be, 44? 38 and 44 record. You don't deserve a damn playoff, a 7-game playoff round.
No, and whatever happened in the old days when the Bulls would make the playoffs and sweep the Hornets in 3, and that was it.
Yeah, or the Bucks, or the Sixers. Absolutely. Yeah. I miss those days tremendously. Yeah, well.
And if you go out and you lose in the first round, and you lost. Look at the bright side. It could be 1 game.
It could be a 1-game playoff. Could you imagine if the 70-win Bulls got in, had a 1-game playoff when they got in and somehow slipped on a banana peel and lost to, you know, the 76ers or something.
Well, it would have been to the Raptors, because I believe they lost multiple times to the Raptors in that 70-win season.
They did, but the Raptors won, like, 2 other games besides that, so they had a record of, like, 4-78.
Yeah, which made no sense that the Bulls won 72 games that year, and 2 of their losses were to the Toronto Raptors, who were just shit.
Oh, believe me, I still have Damon Stoudemire in purple pinstripe nightmares about that team. Don't think I forgot about that.
All right, I'm done.
Okay.
I'm spent.
As I said 15 minutes ago, Jason has a recap of Week 4, and our picks are up on the blog when we make our picks. This week is going to be on Friday at 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern. And the website for our blog is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. Jason's on Twitter at IMLDJTG. I am at IMLDDre. You can always email the show with any questions or comments. We're still waiting for our first email. The address for that is inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. That's inmuchlessdetail. inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. Tell us how much we suck. Tell us how tired we sound. Tell us whatever. And you're listening to this after show now because you're listening to the archive on our live show page, blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail, or you subscribe to us on iTunes, just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Either way, we thank you for listening. We don't know why you're listening, but we thank you anyway. He's Jay, I'm Dre, this is In Much Less Detail, the podcast, and we will talk to you Friday night for week 5.